You're listening to the Christian Post Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Showalter. According to Hebrews 11:1, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the certainty of things unseen. And today, amid uncertain times, particularly in light of a global coronavirus pandemic, many Christians are finding themselves going deeper with God, as is usually the case when the hard times hit. But if indeed faith is the assurance of things hoped for, then kindling our faith means getting in touch with hope. And if that hope is found in the person of Jesus, it won't disappoint us. And yet, all too many believers remain stuck in disappointment. And it's that tapping into hope process that they fear. Put simply, they just don't know how to find hope. But my guest today has an inspired prescription for that very problem. Andy Mason hails from New Zealand and has over 15 years of experience helping individuals and organizations discover and align with their purpose and then develop practical steps to make their dreams a reality. He has worked for a national consultancy firm and a leading financial institution and has invested in international community development. He's the founder and director of Heaven in Business, which is based in Redding, California, and it's a movement to connect and catalyze believers in Jesus in the marketplace to partner with God in their realm of influence. He is the author of God With You at Work, but his latest book is a devotional, which I'm really excited to talk about, called Finding Hope in Crazy Times. Andy Mason, welcome to the CP Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much, CP, Christian Post, and thank you, Brandon.
Well, it's great to talk to you today. And you mentioned to me when we corresponded last week that you've got your new book out, which I want to talk about. But you had no idea that when you were writing it last year that the events of today would be transpiring as they are. That, you know, talk about finding hope in a crazy time. Are we ever in one? But before we get into the substance of what you've written, I want to talk a little bit about just the nature of hope, because I've got to meet Andy several times during my Bible school years several years ago. And if there's any man who knows how to carry hope, it's this guy. This is my first question. I find that even within the church, where we have the great hope of the gospel that doesn't disappoint us, it's transcendent, it's eternal, and yet there's this phrase that goes around, don't get your hopes up. It's that very thing that dampens faith. Could you talk about the nature of hope and maybe even talk a little bit about, just to get us started, this is the very thing that we need in these times, again, with the virus that's broken out all over the globe. But why are so many people afraid of hope? But just talk about the nature of hope, but to get us started.
Yeah. So, I mean, the nature of hope is all about seeing. Mm. So if I'm hopeless, I cannot see a better tomorrow. If I have hope, I have a positive expectation of the future. And we could talk about that in the light of eternity, but it's more than that. It's actually now. And we know hope is not just a vain imagination, a delirious avoidance of what is going on. Right. It's very aware of what we are in. It's not denying what is going on. It's just denying that effect on how I'm going to live my life in as much as I can. So I understand why people, all of us, have had hope, have stepped out, have taken risk, and have had what we dreamed of go awry, go different to what we planned. I get that. Mm-hmm. But the world is not looking for another disappointed, hopeless story. The world needs hope. The beauty too is, use the analogy of the Olympics. Right. The gold medal at the Olympics, that medal itself is probably worth some money, but not a huge, huge amount of money. And yet when everybody watches that, the value of that medal is not what the medal is of itself.
That's
it's
right.
What they've overcome in order to get there. It's the same as the cup, the trophy. It's like a $2 trophy, but it's what you've had to overcome in order to get there. And in order to overcome, you've got to hold on to hope and keep going. And so I understand it fully. I think the biggest thing where it knocks off our hope is we get disappointed It's like Peter when he jumped out of the boat to walk on the water to see Jesus. There's 11 people in the boat. They're on social media. And then there's one person who's actually doing something. He's walking on water. And he gets distracted by all the reality around us, the wind, the waves, the storm. And we start to sink. And the beauty is, one, Jesus took a hold of him and said, do it again. You can keep going. But my challenge is, what if the 11 in the boat had said, let's go. You can do this. What if they said, come on, Peter, keep going. Come on, Brandon, you can do this. Keep going.
Right.
I think that would be the voice that would give hope to people, give hope and give courage to everyone around us who are taking risks. And at the very point that they start to sink, what if we heard a voice saying, you can do this?
Amen. I love it. I love it. I love it. So let's talk about your new book, because it is, if ever, talk about timing. You had no idea that the world was going to change so profoundly when you were writing this book. What generated how did you get started in writing it, and what was it born out of? And talk about the timing of its release.
Yeah. So if we jump straight to the timing of its release, yes, we had no idea that this was nobody planned something like this.
Right.
But the world was crazy. I mean,
oh, yes.
Talk about Washington, D.C.
Oh,
and just the crazy times. Even this year that seems so long ago, but you know, we've been through impeachment. We've been through all sorts of just strange craziness.
Right.
Just from that side. And then if you talk about different businesses, ups and downs, there was crazy things going on. This has just become global crazy.
Right.
And so where'd the book come from? My wife and I left New Zealand in 2008, followed the voice of God, came to Redding, California, did a ministry school, not really sure what our future was. My background is agriculture, business, finance. And we end up in this ministry school wondering, what on earth are we doing? And through just a series of, well, I would say, following the voice of God, following intuition, being faithful with what is in our hand, we end up working in this organization, now building out Heaven and Business. But the core of it is, if I hadn't had hope or known how to find hope, well, I'd be back in New Zealand 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, I've been through fires that devastated our community.
Right.
I've been through horrendous health challenges with my oldest daughter, where she found out she had an enlarged aortic root and a nerve condition that was just ridiculous. Just thing after thing after thing has happened, and it's been literally crazy, the ups and downs of life. And the one thing that's anchored me has been daily journaling and hearing the voice of God through Scripture. And it's application to my life that's anchored me in hope. So, you know, I was never imagining to do anything. It's my personal journeys, personal journals and personal journey. But about August last year, my wife and I were talking about, you know, what's the next opportunity for us? We've written two other books. And we say, well, you know, what if we took, I talked a couple of times to different people about, you know, what I'd heard God say, and it encouraged people. What if I took those journal entries and we took them into and turned them into something that would be useful for others as well? And so that's kind of how it birthed. My wife was the one who actually wrote it in terms of translating it from my journal into something that was legible. And then I went through and adjusted and edited and completed and rounded out the stories. And it's turned into a 30-day devotional, or just 10 minutes to literally find hope in crazy times.
Wow. So great. So great. And well, and it's those moments that punctuate our history, where we dedicate ourselves to God and just stop and tune in, that then become gifts to other people. I love that. Now, I think of you as a businessman. I mentioned that I want you to tell our listeners about what Heaven and Business is all about, but I want you to speak to the hearts of the small business owners right now who are devastated, because both of my parents are small business people. I know that, you know, my dad is in an industry where it's sort of been declared essential business, but my mom is having to navigate a lot of different things now in light of what's going on. Talk about Heaven and Business and what you're up to lately, but also, yes, just speak to the hearts of the small business people who their world has just been upended.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's there's so many different directions. So just interrupt if I go off
track. I'm sure everything you say will be gold.
Yeah. So my background is business and small business in New Zealand. So agriculture, which, yes, it's an essential service. But I was in the service side of that and in finance. Coming to the States, as a part of a ministry school that took literally what Jesus said, pray, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Let your kingdom come. Let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So really that's this mandate. So what does it look like for the fullness of what Jesus paid for to manifest in our cities? Now, at the ministry school, that a lot of it was for healing and miracles. Mm-hmm. But I'm a business person. And for me, it's got to be more than that. Like, what does a city fully alive look like? And if Jesus died for all creation to be fully alive, that means our cities must be alive, which means that the heart of the city, which is to me is the economic engine, the individual business people, the mums and dads in business, small to medium businesses across America have to thrive. So my question was, so what are we doing as followers of Jesus, as hope carriers? What are we doing to help, to encourage, to uplift, to edify, to say, okay, what does it look like for a small business owner to experience God and what's possible with God in building excellent business that adds value to the city they serve? So I literally just got connected with one business in the city where I live. It's a city of 100,000, lots of small businesses. And we partnered with them. They, at the time, they had a prayer club is what they called it. And that was about it, you know, looking after people really well. But that has grown over the last 12 years to now be a track in that same school of ministry of how do I build a business that would give evidence that there's a God without having to put a fish somewhere or a T-shirt or some slogan.
Right.
But what does it actually look like? And so from students, local business community, conferences, executive retreats, an online platform, advisory services, and we've just launched a series of boot camps. And so that we're getting this full circle going. Now, the core of it is people are saying, what's the differentiator? And the interesting thing for me is the number one difference of a follower of Jesus in business compared to anybody else is this, like an Exodus 33, the story of Moses. And Moses is on this mountain and he's like, I'm surrounded by all of these problems, all these problem people, all these difficulties. You know, I'd rather die here in the wilderness with that than achieve any form of success without these people that you've given me. So number one is it's all about people. Mm-hmm. But then number two, God says, okay, Moses, but I'm not going to come with you. I'm going to send an angel to go with you to fulfill everything I said about you. And I don't know about you, Brandon, but I'd be like, oh, yeah, bring it on. A provision, protection, power, and direction. I'm into that. I've read the stories. I've never seen an angel in person, but there's so much of culture and history where it's obviously for real. So I'd love that. And Moses says, no deal. I would rather die in this desert with your presence than achieve success without you. And so I was like, well, what's the difference? And then he says this. God says, okay, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. Mm. So to me, that's my peace will go with you. The distinguishing factor, he literally says this, for how will we be distinguished from anyone else around us other than your presence goes with us, which is peace, as in I think it's way more than just a greeting or a sense of a, you know, cerebral feeling.
Right.
It's actually a tangible, yes, inherent depth of existence where I'm locked in and anchored, where my future is secure, my eternal future is secure. I don't understand what's going on right now, but I have a hope in a future because God is with me. This is very name, is very nature. So that's one aspect, is peace. It's wholeness, physical, financial, mental, relational, financial. Yes. And I will give you rest. So because my presence will give you, and I'll give you rest, which is not you're just going to sleep all day. It's not it's not that at all. It's that my identity doesn't come from striving and accomplishment and busyness. That's not what defines my success. My success is defined by connection with my Creator, period.
Yes.
So when I wake up in the morning, I'm already loved, accepted, adored, and connected. And then what I do in my day is an overflow of that. So let's then talk about small businesses. So right now, it's crazy. Yeah. There are, I was just on a call with about 38 business people on a Zoom call, and I just got a show of hands. On a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is 100% of your business is gone, you know, 1 is, so from 1 to 10 is from 10 to 100% of your business is gone. And it was interesting. They were all across the spectrum. There was a handful, maybe 10% of them, businesses just wiped out completely.
Wow.
Handful of them, only 10%. And majority, somewhere in the middle, are affected. And then I said, okay, what about, are there anyone on the call that your business has actually increased in the middle of this? Now, we know food business is just booming. If you just happen to have a company that's in medical supplies, it's the time of your life.
Toilet paper.
Toilet paper. Hand sanitizer.
Right.
Yeah, there's you know, these device, like the technology, Zoom.
Right.
It's just,
my goodness,
blowing up.
Right.
If you invested in that at the right time. So, and there was probably another 10%. So it was like 10% businesses destroyed, 10% their business is just really fragile. 10% they're actually moving ahead, and then everyone else in the middle. So there's a huge spectrum. So what do you do? And for me personally, this is what, and this is really what Finding Hope in Crazy Times is all about. It's the one thing that anchors me is my peace, my security, but it's hearing the voice of God as it pertains to my day. So literally, so
it's a lifestyle. Let's just make it, it's a lifestyle.
Yep. It is a lifestyle. It's not an event, but let's make it real personal. So here's what I do. And this is what we give away in the book. It's my story, but it's in such a way that others could apply it. Success is that people actually take it and apply it for their lives, and it helps them grow in their small business. So I've got a small business. I've got 6 employees. We've built it from zero. It's entrepreneurial. There are no backstops. It's like it has to stand alone, otherwise it doesn't exist. I've got rent to pay for space that I'm not even using. It's just like a bang in my head. And so I'm just like, okay, God, what do I do? I'm looking at a $40,000 loss over the next 3 months because of the events that we've had to cancel, the in-person events. And I'm just like, oh, God, what do I do? What do I do? So I wake up at like 4 a.m. last week. And it's now getting to the point where I'm going to have to go back to work. So now I'm starting to think of budget, and it's kind of, we had a period where there was nothing I could do. Now I'm starting to think through, what am I going to do? How am I going to do that? And I'm getting all jacked up. So, okay, put on some worship music. So I put my earbuds in. I'm listening to worship music. It's just not working. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Oh, look, audio Bible. So I put on the audio Bible. Hope, nothing. I'm just thinking, I just need to hear the stories of Jesus and miracles. Book of John. Nothing's working for me. Like, oh, what do I do? It's like, oh, nothing's working. So I'm going to look at the, I'm just going to scroll through my emails. Well, that's the dumbest thing to do, because I'm reading one that says, literally one of the emails was bad news, was the title. So now my jacked up is jacked up. and now I've got a call at 7 a.m. I've got to jump on. I'm like, now what do I do? So I get up, I'm ironing myself a shirt because, yeah, I'm home, but I'm still going through that process of being professional. And I'm thinking, man, I just need to know what to do. And suddenly, light bulb. Oh, duh. Read Proverbs. It's the book of wisdom. What you need is wisdom. So I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I start, as I'm ironing my shirt, I'm playing Proverbs 4. And literally, these phrases start to jump out. And the phrases, I'm just going to read these to you. It's anybody can go look it up. But it's these Proverbs 4, 5, and then 25 to 27. Don't forget my words. Don't turn your back on wisdom. Be patient. Look straight ahead and fix your eyes on what lies before you. Mark out a straight path for your feet. Stay on the safe path. Don't get sidetracked. Keep your feet from following evil. And so I step back and I'm like, okay. And all of that is don't change the subject. So like, okay, God, you're saying don't change the subject, don't change what I'm doing. But it's like, I don't understand, because I can't I've got three live events. If you're saying don't change the subject, I can't not change the subject. And so I was like, okay. So I backtrack a bit, and it's all about reset, refocus. So what am I focused on? Okay, God is first in all life. Success is friendship with Him. He has led us all the way. He has provided. This is literally what I wrote in my journal, April the 18th. Faith, family, and business. That's the subject. So then, okay, what is my focus? I'm writing this down in my journal. My focus is a husband, a father, a friend, a leader, friend of God. And then I start to write down other questions. Where is their favor? Where is their momentum? What are the skills that are in my hand already? And where is there a flow of, is there a flow of resources? And I'm sitting there, I'm processing. I'm just like, I'm not getting it, not getting it. And then I have this conversation with Ray Edwards, a friend of mine. And we're just processing together, what are we hearing God say? And I said, well, Proverbs 4, it's like, don't change the subject. It doesn't make sense. And something Ray said triggered me to realize, oh my gosh, it's don't change the subject. That's correct. Just change the delivery. Mm. And it was like I had a light bulb moment from Proverbs 4 that's saying, Andy, keep doing what you're doing. We do these executive retreats. I cannot do them physically right now. It's been canceled for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But I suddenly had this light bulb. I've had the person on my team that leads events just happened to be doing a meeting, an online meeting for event planners of how to do events on Zoom, using Zoom. I was like, oh my gosh, this has just opened up my world. What if I did executive retreats virtually? It would look different. The subject would be the same, but the delivery would just be different. And it's created this whole creative journey of how we can pivot our business, and it's going to turn from us doing two a year to pretty much we could do one every single month.
Amazing.
And now we're going to have an audience all over.
So great.
That is a practical way of what I would say is finding hope, which is finding the voice of God anchored in His word and applying it to my life that results in a practical solution that can is actually going to be the difference between my business dying and my business living.
So great. Well, I want to reference back to an article when I actually interviewed you a few years ago, and what you said in that interview was just so, I mean, it was just so gold, because I think, you know, speaking about anchoring ourselves in the hope that comes from God in His word, it's really the starting point has to be, okay, if God doesn't show up, if we can't have any kind of confident expectation that He's going to come through, then we may as well just quit and just give up. Yeah. But because He's for us and not against us, we can live with that expectation. And that's not an entitlement mentality. And one of the things you said in this interview a few years ago that I've just found it just be so brilliant was, you know, you told me, and I'm quoting you here, I believe in a prosperity gospel as much as I believe in a poverty gospel. Both of them are wrong. I just love that. The poverty gospel is stupid because how can you help anybody with no resources? And with respect to prosperity teaching, you understand that it's way out of context, and it's about, you know, your own sort of self-confidence, security, and well-being. But when you follow Jesus and you lay your life down and you serve Him, anytime you walk away from that, it's, you know, far from the heart of the gospel, because the cross is so central. I just, that perspective is just so, so important for, I think, business leaders today who they've had such dreams about, you know, wanting to serve God with their businesses. They want to take, and I really believe too that we don't know what all is going to happen in culture. I think for months and maybe even years after this pandemic, when it passes, the repercussions of how things will be restructured in society. But one of the things that I think, and I was talking with my editors about this the other day, I think the church is going to have to be, and the coronavirus has just maybe sort of caused everybody to awaken to it, perhaps, but much more in the marketplace in the coming days.
Yep.
They're taking the presence of God to local businesses. That, not this is not to diss the church. God will still use it, and indeed, that has its place too. But what are you seeing in terms of, you know, post-COVID world? Do you see the church finally getting this kind of thing? And speak a little bit more about how people can start with that kind of confident expectation when it comes to their business, and that, no, it's not prosperity gospel to believe that, you know, God's for you, and you can expect you can expect his blessings to come to you, and that's not that you're somehow owed, you know, a jet plane or whatever.
Yeah, correct. And we're 100% in agreement on that. Is Jesus never promised it would be easy.
Right.
But he did promise he'd be with us.
Exactly.
You know, he talks about you'll be more than overcomers, which means you've overcome something. And if anybody's overcome anything, they know it's usually because it's been difficult, hard. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's the same with hope. If there is no risk, there's no need for hope. There's no need for faith. There's no need for anything. So actually, it's in the brokenness of humanity that the power of the gospel is made manifest. That's where it is. We were born to me. It's like we were born to take chaos and make it beautiful. That's the original mandate. I love what Reverend Timothy Keller said is, God made the world not as a warrior who digs a trench, but as an artist who creates a masterpiece.
Love it.
Literally, we were placed in a garden and we were told to take everything that's broken, dysfunctional and chaotic and turn it into something beautiful. So let's get to your prosperity thing. And I love Genesis 12, the Abrahamic covenant that we're all a part of is, I will bless you, and in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So I will prosper you. But it's actually not just about you. It's about so that every family in the earth, it doesn't say only these followers of this religion or this faith. It's literally everyone will be blessed because of you.
Right.
And so I just think prosperity only becomes a problem when you have a small vision, which is just yourself.
That's right.
And the easiest way is it's impossible for it to destroy someone when they're actually connected to the pain of humanity. Mm. And it's just like, just connect with that and then say, and then you find that the people in those situations, they're so quite like, God help us, God bless us so that everything that I touch prospers. Mm. Because I've got plans. Like what would it look like to pay off the national debt of a nation? What would that look like to walk into some hospitals that are struggling and just say, I just want you to know that I've just underwritten your annual budget for next year?
Amazing.
You know,
love
it. It's just like, why not?
We need to think like that. We need to think with that kind of gutsiness. I love it. Keep going.
Yeah. So that's the whole, it's just like, you don't just have an invitation to prosper. You have a mandate to prosper. And is it possible that we're thinking too small? So, I mean, that just winds me up. I just like, oh, man, what could we do? Now, that's wonderful and it's lofty, but I'm still stuck in the now, which is this whole journey of, I think it still comes back to identity. Mm-hmm. Is my identity is based on my bank account. My security is in my bank account. And I've had to walk through this too. Is my security was in a PPP loan and then I didn't get it. And so I was all discouraged. It's like God says, Andy, I am your source, not the PPP loan. It's like, and whether you got or not, that's not the point. The point is, who is your source and what does that look like? And so what I see from a church perspective, the institution of the church, where the institution has just become a lifeless institution, that's just a waste of time. Mm-hmm. But the power of the gospel is real and it always has been real. And I think within any church organization across the planet, there are lively people alive, and there's people that are not so alive. And I just see, I love the church. Everywhere I'm going, the church being the community of believers, they're engaged, they're active, they're moving forward, they've got community. Those ingredients are beautiful, especially at this time. And I just look at any time throughout history that there has been hardship, difficulty, plague, famine, disease, the church usually rises up and has comes alive in those places.
Amen.
And the times when it's easy and it's comfortable and it's relaxing, I'm just describing America over the last 8 years, it's just like the church loses its power and effectiveness. It's like we were born to like get amongst it. And it's the same in the book of Acts. When the church actually became the church and blew up, was actually in the middle of adversity, and it wasn't a large public gathering that we somehow call success today. It was in every home across cities. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, Brandon, but I've been watching with the online church, which has blown up in the last few weeks.
Right.
I see worship happening in every home, in every family, and different places are struggling and with their technology and so on. But I just know it's been amazing. The church that I've been a part of, I mean, they've seen a quadruple in the amount of people that have been a part of their Sunday services.
Wow.
Online and offline included. So beforehand, there was some online component. Now the whole thing is quadrupled.
Amazing.
Why? Because people are starving for hope.
Yes.
And they just won't tolerate anything less than that.
Mm.
They put up with it in the easy times. But in hard times, I can't afford to waste my time just doing that. So I think we're moving from being an event-based Christianity to a lifestyle-based.
Andy Mason, that's so edifying. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much, Brandon.